It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We have a great show in store for you. My good friend Glenn Baker, who will be with us this morning, he's appearing telephonically as well as myself. I know we're all caught up with the grips of COVID-19, and we're all doing our very best under these difficult circumstances. I wanted to dedicate today's show to the first responders, the people that are putting themselves out on the line for us all the time. Talking about the healthcare workers, the essential workers. Without these folks, I don't know what we would do. You know, I was reading a little bit recently about this pandemic, and, you know, something really struck me is, you know, if these folks aren't out there putting it out on the line for us every day, the whole system would collapse. So I wanted to dedicate the show to the first responder community. Glenn, are you with us this morning?
I am. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Glenn. I wasn't sure if MK was able to patch in. I wanted to say, you know, Glenn, it was kind of ironic you're appearing this morning since I know you've been a great first responder for Boot and for like 20 years. And when I was thinking about the show, I'm like, well, what's a better time than to thank a first responder like a gentleman like yourself? So good morning, and it's going to be a great show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Todd.
So I wanted to ask you, because everybody, this is all everybody's talking about, is the pandemic. I have to tell you, it's like the twilight zone for probably all of us, with social distancing and just most people are working remotely and everybody's life's turned upside down. How are you and your family doing?
You know, the family is good. What's interesting is that I kind of look at the positive side of things, or I try to at least, and we're all healthy, which is a great thing. I've had 11 days straight of family dinners, which I haven't had in 20 years. And, you know, I think a big piece is I'm just kind of catching up on things that I probably wouldn't get to otherwise. And we've had the good fortune of being able to help some others in our neighborhoods and around us, so.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more family time for all of us. I was watching Governor Cuomo yesterday, a great governor from New York, and he was really touching on the fact that so many more people are spending time, one-on-one time, quality time with their family. So I think it is important to look at the positive, get the silver lining out of these difficult times. So he was talking about spending really great moments with his daughter and his mom, and probably a lot of the listeners are home and, you know, they feel isolated, but, you know, they have an opportunity to reach out to their friends and family and make the most of a difficult time. I know a lot of people are trying to also catch up on, you know, household projects and just really just get through these challenging times. So, Glenn, I wanted to, you know, for the listeners, I always find it really helpful to learn a little bit more about you and who you are as a person. Where are you from?
I was born in Boonton, grew up in Parsippany, and now I'm a Boonton resident of about 20 years.
Okay. And you have children?
I do. From my first marriage, I have four, and from my second marriage, I have four, so eight total.
Wow, that's I'm conjuring up the Brady Bunch right there, but probably a few little twists and turns, I would imagine. In terms of your professional life, can you tell us a little bit about your, you know, kind of the different jobs you had over the years and kind of where you are now in your life and career?
Sure, thanks. So I was a serial entrepreneur from, I guess, lemonade stands all the way up to to my professional life in corporate. I've started and sold about three companies. In the last one sold in 2011. My professional career has taken me to about 100 different countries, 48 contingent states. I lived in India for 2.5 years of that and Bulgaria for about a year. So I retired from corporate life about the end of 2018. I spent a lot of time on planes and away from home, and I lost in 2016 my sister Wendy at 46 years old, and my sister Nadine subsequently last year, February 28th, both of them to suicide. So for me, I decided I didn't want to, for lack of a better term, die in a plane seat without any memories. So I quit in May of 2018, took the summer off to be with my daughter. It was last year, going into her senior year of high school. And one thing that was for sure was going back to kind of corporate life wasn't for me anymore. So one night to dinner, my wife said, what do you want to do? What are you going to do? I need you to get out of the house because you're driving me crazy. And I had said, I think real estate. And she was shocked. And I, the way I likened it to it was that I wanted to do one-on-one transactions with people that was material and important to them. And I guess a week later, I signed up. I went through the classes. And then I really looked at the way that I could service and give a customer experience that was very different from what the typical realtor was perceived as. And then I started to look for things and ways to help in the community and embed myself a little bit better than I already was. And for lack of a better term, become the mayor of that community. So I established the fastest growing real estate team in North Jersey, built a portfolio of referenceable five-star clients very, very quickly. In my first year, won Circle of Excellence as well as Rookie of the Year for the office. And I've been doing a lot of training for Weichert Corporate, who I work for, and basically Facebook Lives. Especially during this time, I've been doing a lot of Facebook Lives to support the small businesses in the area, which are really, really having a hard time right now.
Right, and I wanted to just, first of all, my condolences to the passing of you, both of your sisters to suicide. My, you know, heart goes out to you. You know, we had on the we had a show, really three shows in a row that talked about teen suicide and suicide in general. I was very fortunate to have Wendy and Steve Sefcik, wonderful people from Montville, and then Diane Grossman, who launched Mallory's Army, and Elena Wood, and Vicki Duffy, who was really putting a spotlight on folks that unfortunately have, you know, self-injury awareness problems, and trying to help them, you know, really spread the message, because, you know, this is a real problem, unfortunately, not just for teens, the service folks, really just through our society. So my deepest condolences over your losses. In terms of Glenn, and this is why I find you to be a fascinating guy. You know, I met you, if you may recall, back in November. I'm really active in the 200 Club of Mars County, and I met you at the Birchwood Manor. You had a little booth over there. I think you were with what one of your sons, I think, was with you?
Correct, Ryan, yes.
Yeah, and I was just struck by your enthusiasm about volunteerism for Booton, and myself being a Mars County resident, raising my family in, I think, the greatest county, you know, I was just struck by just your interest in helping others and volunteerism. But I didn't know at that time your professional career in terms of the different things you did. I have to say, though, it's a lot of respect. You know, a lot of folks may be listening right now. They're in a career. They're in a job. They're not that fulfilled. But they're afraid. They're nervous. They don't know what to do. If, oh, my God, if I don't do this job anymore, I'm not going to pay my bills. And unfortunately, a lot of people end up hating what they do. So to your credit, I guess you realized what was important in your life, and you made a big change. I would also add, since my law firm, I do a fair amount of advertising on Facebook, and I think you might outdo me, Glenn. Every time I have my iPhone, boom. One of your spots are there, so I wanted to give you kudos on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let me, if I may, because, you know, the reason why I wanted to have you come on, and like I said, it's very appropriate, was your volunteerism. When did you first start to get involved in really the wonderful thing of giving back, and that's really what the show's all about? When did it start?
Well, I think that my parents certainly set a stage for that, but my real involvement on a personal level, I guess you could say, was when I was not struggling, you know, to get the family started and get those items started. So I think around 1999 was when I began. My first step was really with the Boy Scouts in terms of leadership.
So why the Boy Scouts?
Yeah, so I was starting a company, and I'll call it a selfish reason. I wanted to have it on my calendar. I live by my calendar, and I kept coming out of New York City missing sports events and other things with my kids. So I knew as soon as I got this on the calendar, it would be something that I would do, and I'd have to show up and be committed. And then I got hooked because I was always an outdoors person, and I took lots of different leadership roles within the Scouts. I initiated some things that we had never done before, like adult Pinewood Derbies to get adults engaged and have fun and raise some money for the Scouts, rain gutter regattas where you make boats and you float them down rain gutters, and we built a whole entire rig for that, and then camping trips just up and down the East Coast. I absolutely love being outdoors. I think that that's where people get to find out who they really are, and my boys were always involved, so I had three boys and a girl. and even the girl was always involved. So it was, you're coming along regardless. And then as my boys got older, I obviously went on to Boy Scouts, and I did high adventure trips. And when each of the boys turned 16 years old, we went out west, and we did a trek for 11 days, and just us, no cell phones, and a conversation to realize Dad's a real guy and someone I can talk to. So I would say Scouts was a big, big part of our life for sure. And I have, you know, I have a life. I have an Eagle Scout and a Star Scout as well.
Well, wonderful. I mean, I tried the Boy Scouts as a little guy, and I don't know. It wasn't for me. I was more into athletics, but a lot of people that stayed with it really have enjoyed it and made it really part of their life. You said something, too, Glenn, which is, I think, important, because everybody has a life to live. They got to pay the bills. But also that family time, to spend time with the kids, which is so precious and valuable. I know my late dad worked his fanny off to support us, and he did his best. He tried to coach Little League whenever he could, but candidly, he just worked. He's a workaholic. And to his credit, I mean, he provided a great life for us. I know you talked about finding the time, so getting it on your calendar. Is that something for the listeners they should be considering as well?
Yeah, I agree. I consider, we do planning. So my family does 5, 10, 15-year plans, right? And I believe in this. And one of our goals that we do is we put first, you know, weddings and family events, and then we put in anything that's volunteer, and then work gets put on the calendar. And the idea is it has to be that priority because it's so instrumental to what makes us work. So definitely putting it on the calendar is important.
So I got to go back, Glenn. I've never heard of this before, the Rain Gutter Regatta, and I'm curious. Hopefully some of the listeners are. What exactly goes on at the Rain Gutter Regatta that you're involved in?
So you have two rain gutters that are filled with water, and the boys and girls shape boats, and they have sails on them, and you blow them down the rain gutter to see who wins.
Interesting. Where was that held at? I'm just interested.
That was at a church in town, yes.
Oh, cool. That's a cool event. You also mentioned some other activity with your boys when they were a little bit younger where you just kind of hang out. You wouldn't be on the, you know, but, you know, you put the phone down and you basically just spend quality time. I know I'm guilty as well. I know at times I don't put my iPhone down enough, and it's really something I'm working on. Probably like most of us, we end up checking it way too often. I'm sure there's probably a psychological condition or disorder that's going to be diagnosed for probably all of us because you end up just checking it way too much. But I love that idea, too, just spending that quality time with the boys. So in terms of the things that you've been doing, let's talk about the Boonton Fire Department, because I know that that's really near and dear to your heart. And like I said, when I saw you in November, I was just really struck by it. Just I could tell you're really passionate about it. When did you get started with the Boonton Fire Department?
Well, I came across the fire department as a part of a scout trip when we brought my boys up to the firehouse. And I met, and they did the walkthrough, and I said, this is pretty neat. How does it work? And I met a good friend of mine, Jimmy, who I've known for many years now. And he had said, well, why don't you think about joining? And I just didn't think I had the time to do it. So I put it on ice for about 6 months, and then I came back and I said, hey, I'm interested in doing this because I'm one of those folks that can't do anything 60%. I got to do 100, 110% or it just doesn't work. And it really looked like something I did because I was pretty athletic, but I wasn't doing a lot athletically, and the adrenaline and the skills were kind of the perfect match for my type of personality. And then I joined up. Literally ran the fire academies locally out of their courses. I took every course I could, including, you know, going to Ohio and other places to take courses just to up my skills and credentials and also competency for on the fire ground.
So when you joined the Boonton Fire Department, and just a shout out to all the great firefighters, you know, so much respect for the guys, the men and women that do that, you know, especially the volunteers. I was so fortunate to have Gary Lynch on from the Mendon Borough. Captain Lynch was a great guy. I'd never met him before, and I was, like, blown away. Just another great example, like yourself, just giving back and just something about it just gravitated him to the fire department. It probably was the legacy of his dad and just kind of a family love affair. What made you think about the fire department? Did you have a family member or someone that was in it?
So I found out long after my father passed that he was involved in Parsippany's both fire department and ambulance squad, and I didn't really know where he was going to do that, but I saw mugs where he was given, you know, awards for it. But I wasn't a firehouse kid, so to speak, like my kids grew up. But it was really, I don't want to call it a paramilitary organization, but it had this discipline, it had this, this rigor, and also a camaraderie that I had never experienced before in my life. And that was the piece that got me hooked. You make a phone call and someone's bringing dinner when your family's sick, or, someone has a broken pipe at 2 a.m. and all of a sudden everyone's converging on their house to take care of it. We've done roofs on houses. I mean, it's such an incredible, family that's just amazing. So much so, I'll put it into context of when I got married to my wife in 2016, we had the entire wedding was in Wildwood at the hotel that the fire department stays at, with all of our friends booking the entire hotel, and everyone in the wedding party was related. Everyone that did photography was fire department related. DJs, everything was fire department related.
So it sounds like one huge family that you've had probably since 1999.
It is, and it's a blessing for sure.
Yeah, no, it sounds like an incredible bunch. Like I said, when Captain Lynch was on the show, I could just see just the camaraderie and just how it really enriched his life. So why don't you walk us through, for the benefit of the listeners, you know, in terms of that volunteerism with the Boonton Fire Department. So you started in 99. Now, where were you working?
I was working in New York City at the time.
So, what did you have, like a corporate position?
It was, yeah, it was my my second startup.
All right, so this is something for all the listeners, because one of the things that I'd love to do is to hopefully inspire the folks. We all need inspiration right now. Lord knows what the challenges we're all facing, and hopefully the listeners will enjoy, you know, your being on and telling us about your kind of journey in life. But for the folks that are thinking about doing something, because, you know, right now, you know, everybody wants to help. We're not sure how to help. We want to help the first responders. We want to help the incredible healthcare workers. We really want to show our support. But people got to, you know, think about how to do it. How did you find the balance back then? So in the, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, you got a startup, you got financial obligations. How'd you do it?
Yeah, it was challenging. The most interesting piece about it was we use percentages in the fire department for showing how we've responded and trained and do activities contributing to the service. And my percentages then were much, much higher than they actually are now. And I think that it was when you're younger and you're really you want to get involved. And my one of my premises of the fire department was I didn't want to just write a check and have it go to a foundation and say, there's my service. I wanted to see the person that I helped. And we had a lot of activity in my early years as a captain and lieutenant, both in terms of fires and rescues, that it was addictive. I'll call it selfish. I wanted to feel good, and feeling good meant that I was there. And as soon as I took an officer position, it was a very different conversation that I had with myself. It was, I'm now responsible for all these other people and making sure that they go home to their families. So you had to take it so seriously, and I wouldn't miss an event. I would get off a flight at 12 o'clock at night and go to the firehouse at 1 o'clock to check things and make sure they were okay before I went to bed, because people depended on it, and I didn't want to be the person that let anyone down. So it draws you in, and if you take it as seriously as it really should, it doesn't seem like it's a service. It just seems like something that you have to do. It's as important as breathing.
You know, and guys like you, Glenn, I mean, this is what makes me feel great about being part of this unbelievable community. I touched on a little bit about the 200 Club of Morris County. I've been so privileged to serve on the Board of Trustees, and I've been on the last few years to really get a chance to see the heroic and valor of the folks here in the community, the first responder community. And it takes a special person. You know, for the listeners, it's incredible the dedication of the first responder community to all of us. Most of these folks are volunteers. They do it out of the goodness of the heart, but they put their life on the line. And it means the world to me and my family. I'm sure everyone, that guys like you and ladies are out there doing what needs to be done to protect us all. I mean, you talk about a commitment. You were getting to the firehouse so early just to make sure everything was right because of the responsibility. Why do you think that was? What made you inside feel that, that desire to be so passionate about this organization?
You know, as soon as you start to see the faces of people you're helping, it definitely changes the dynamic. But it's almost the culture of that assistance that drives you forward. You don't want to let anyone down. So you almost get deeper and deeper into it, trying to, one, make sure that your skills never let anyone down, that your activities as a whole don't do that. And that's, it's an important part, because no one wants to go home and sit on the bed and think, wow, I hurt my brother or sister because I didn't do something that I should have done. So it comes down to training. It comes down to understanding all the equipment. And we have just such a plethora of equipment to get skilled on. And then it's also, you know, no one told me when I joined the fire department, hey, did you know that a UPS truck is a hazmat waiting to happen, right? Or 287 is a target risk, or that, you know, that we're going to, you know, do tons of jobs on the highway for rollovers and such. No one told you those things when you initially get in. And then once you do it, you go, okay, so how do I solve this problem? And I am a problem solver, so I think that that's something that drew me in, and I love the problem solve on the fly, make the decision and make it happen very quickly. That was always what interested me in the fire department, and it's given me back tenfold, right? I mean, that's the best part about it.
So in terms of the involvement with the Boonton Fire Department, so you started in 99. Can you kind of walk us through with the different positions you've held in the department?
Yeah, sure. So I took the position of lieutenant in 2002. I went to lieutenant, captain. We have 10 officers and 3 chiefs. So I was the captain and lieutenant of my company. I was the steward, the chief driver, assistant chief driver. I took a role as the rapid intervention team coordinator. So the rapid intervention team, in firematic terms, we call ourselves our brother's keepers. So when there is a fire, we respond strictly to make sure we save our own, which is the firefighters. We don't go to save civilians, and it's a state mandate that we do so. So I got very, very heavily involved, and one of our chiefs actually called them the Green Berets of the fire department, because we need to know everything there is, and your skills are able to tie knots in the dark and do things that others can't do. So I've been involved in that, and I loved it. I did that at the county level as well, in terms of writing the protocol for the county. I could keep going on in terms of, I've emceed countless events, ran fundraisers. Whenever there's a cause that comes up, we run a fundraiser, and I love to be part of that. Most recently, I was a part of what's called the apparatus committee. So we were approved by the town, to purchase a new apparatus. And for the volunteer service, those things last for 25 years roughly. So when you build it, you better build it right, because it needs to service for quite a bit of time. And that committee that I headed up was about almost 2.5 years total, 6,000 man hours, and we visited 10 states during the process of specifying what would be the next generation engine for the department. That was delivered in September of last year.
Great. I wanted to also give you a chance, Glenn. If somebody wanted to reach out to you to, you know, get involved in, let's say, the Boonton Fire Department, is there a number they can contact you at?
Yes, sure. So the best way is my cell phone, and I'll get you in touch with the right people, which is 973-727-8539.
Okay, that's wonderful, because obviously there may be some listeners that want to get involved in that. You mentioned the MC for events. I could tell you're a natural. You don't mind talking like myself. You give us probably a speaker, you know, or something, it could get a little dangerous with a microphone. So, in terms of that overall involvement and the friendships you've developed over these, you know, like 20 years, like you said, I guess at your wedding, it just was a big family event. Did you foresee that when you first started back in the late 90s, you're going to develop these friendships?
No, I just thought I was going to go and do some volunteering, and I never realized the depth that, I mean, it's just pure value, and it's impacted our life so profoundly. And my kids can't imagine a life without it. It's just it's an incredible thing, and I couldn't have anticipated it.
Right, and you mentioned, because you're obviously a devoted family guy. I mean, there's no question about that. You got 8 kids, and you know, you obviously got a love for life. How does that interact with the family? So you've been in the Boonton Fire Department. You wore so many hats with those folks. You're obviously really into it. When did you start to kind of see if your kids would have an interest.
So, quite honestly, they didn't have much of a choice because on Sunday mornings, mom said, hey, I just want to sleep in a bit, and the kids would come to the firehouse with you. And once you're there, who doesn't love a fire truck, right? So the kids would come in, they'd see people treating them really well. And the interesting piece about the fire department is, I had a friend say a quote once, friends know your kids' names, fire department friends know your kids' nicknames. And when they walk into the firehouse and get called their nickname by someone that really loves and cares about them, there's just something that draws you in, and they didn't really have an option.
No, it's really cool. I mean, you said something that rang true to me. I'm blessed with two young boys, too. And any time that we can stop by the firehouse, even the police department as well, it's just a cool thing to watch the kids. You know, just they love it. I don't know why, but I've never seen a young kid that didn't like, getting on the fire truck or, sitting in the police car. There's something about it which I think is wonderful, certainly. In terms of your kids, I wanted to talk about Ryan and Brendan in terms of how that has kind of evolved over the years. Because one of the things that I think as parents, we got to inspire our kids. Did you think as you started to see, Brendan and Ryan start to, go visit the firehouse, how it might impact their lives in a positive way?
I had hoped it would. It was hard to give a roadmap because I raise my kids to be their own people, their own persons. So it was an interesting mix to see them start to come to it. And in the fire department, like any volunteer service, life changes bring people in and out. And you always want to come back. Both of them had times when they were really, really busy with the fire department or busy with college and such. So you wonder, will they come back? And both of them have, and they love it.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I could tell, it's important when the kids get at a certain age, if they have an interest, to see what they want to pursue. And you touch on something too, Glenn, that really is, I think, spot on, which is as parents, we pray our kids do the right thing, but you got to let them kind of run their own race and do their own thing and lift them up when they fall. But you got to give them room to grow. So to your credit, I think you're spot on with that philosophy. Well, how old was Ryan when he first got involved with the Booton Fire Department?
As some people call it the cadets or it's the junior fire department. So both Ryan and Brendan joined at 16. And then they have been members of fire departments. Brendan's on another department and recently moved, but both have been involved since 16.
So that's really cool. So how does that work? You go to the firehouse and then, your sons are going through cadet and they become, full-time, volunteer firefighters. How does that make you feel as a dad to see that?
It was pretty neat, and for me also, it was. I have a good reputation in the fire department, and I wanted my boys to see that and be a part of that, and then obviously carry that legacy a little bit onward, right? And when they would have their junior fire department meetings, which they do training just like we would do to prepare them for the coming of age to 18, and then going off to the fire academy for firefighter one training, I would get to fly into those trainings and do, a knock class or something. And then they get to really see, wow, Dad really knows this stuff, right? And it was a neat experience for sure.
You certainly do. So listen, Glenn, we're going to take a short break. We're going to be right back in 30 seconds.
Okay.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
Welcome back. I have the great honor of continuing our discussion with Glenn Baker, a great guy right here in Booton, giving back for over 20 years with the Booton Fire Department. So I wanted just to, understand the dynamics of this. My late dad, he was a trial lawyer, so I followed my dad around as a young kid, and I really was my hero. And, you know, we just had so much respect for folks that are in the firefighter, police, ambulance squads, whatever it might be in the first responder community. But I want to kind of go through that dynamic. So, you know, Ryan, you love your son, Ryan. Brenda's also a great young man. Both, you know, firefighters. Have you guys gone together on firefighting calls?
We have. My son Brendan was part of the Mountain Lakes Fire Department, and they were we had our active our most active fire of one in Montville. And the irony was, he pulled up, and we use air cylinders, and they last a certain period of time. And I was out on the front lawn, kneeling down, getting an air cylinder swapped out after we kind of fought our way into a building. And my son came up and said, "Hey, Dad, what do you got?" And I had said, "Well, I've got a second air cylinder, and you better get inside, right? Because we are a group that has to push ourselves and do things that we don't normally do." So I got to fight that fire with him, and he got to see that, you know, Dad's pretty aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been a really cool thing. That dynamic is remarkable, but you guys always can cherish those kind of memories together. And in terms of Brendan, I know he's also been, you know, involved in the firefighting community as well. Just as a dad, knowing both of your sons have followed in your proud legacy of being a volunteer and giving back, has that, you know, you're really into it. It's one of those really important things in life to bestow on your kids, is the value of giving back. But have you had a chance to reflect over the last few years, watching your sons grow into men and your involvement in their lives with firefighting?
I have, and as well, both of them were EMTs, which I was not. And when I watched them, patient care is something that's just an amazing skill. And it requires an incredible compassion. And when I hear them tell their stories, or I hear about, you know, how they help someone, especially now with Ryan being with Atlantic Health, and they're doing quite a bit of work because of COVID, it's something that I'm just so proud of. And it's a piece that I wish I had done, but I did not. But certainly great stuff. Great stuff.
So just with Ryan, his involvement with Atlantic Health, I mean, obviously we're in perilous times. And I touched on that at the beginning of the show. I mean, what more can we say as citizens? Just thank you. God bless the first responders. I touched on it. You know, if folks get sick that are in the first responder community, the entire system collapses, and then what happens? So what is that like? Do you talk to Ryan about COVID and what he can do to protect himself and what the morale is like right now?
We do, and it's a conversation pretty much every day, because Ryan is exposed to things that could either make us ill and or others, and especially being with my contact through real estate and such with folks. I don't want to bring anything home through Ryan and then communicate that to somebody else. So we talk about not necessarily the names and where they came from, but what precautions were taken, and if he's had testing and such, which he has had to have some tests done as well.
Yeah, no, it's a frightening time, but God bless your son and all the folks, Atlantic Health and all over the place, that are just doing what they need to do to really help us all through these really challenging times. In terms of, you know, I know you do a lot of other things as well, and I know we, in preparation, you know, you were kind enough to send me some stuff so I could at least seem prepared for the audience, which is usually pretty good to be prepared. I know you talked about some of the messages you have, and quotes that you would put up on their door that kind of was a fixture. Do you remember that?
I do. And so I had custody of my kids, and always trying to get them motivated or to have some outlook on life that was positive was challenging because trying times. And I used to put a quote up, and Chief Tecumseh put up a quote that I've used for you know, for inspiring them a bit. And one of them was to love your life, perfect your life, and beautify all things in your life, and seek to make your life long and in the service of your people. And I used to hang that on their door. And that quote, I used to swap them every day, but that quote landed, and it never really left.
It's a beautiful quote. I mean, if you think about it, if you love your life, you're going to be happy. You're going to really feel fulfilled. You said perfect your life, right? So you'd want to make your life as good as it can be. Beautify all the things in your life. What do you mean by that?
So I'll use an example. When I was young, and I drive along, and you get angry because someone was in the fast lane going slow. And after I read that quote, I changed my thinking a bit, and I said, well, what if that person just lost their loved one? Like, why am I getting upset behind them? So the way I look at it is I never know what someone else is going through, ever, whether it's on the line and they're screaming at the cashier. And I try to take that side to say, give them the benefit of the doubt and try to give them a hand and a smile.
No question about it. You really don't know what people are going through. You also put it in this quote, which is really an amazing quote. Seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of your people. The idea of serving people, is that, how did that become such a powerful mantra for you?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it boils down to such a simple thing, and I do call it selfish. It makes me feel really good. And I like to do things that make me feel really good. And when you help someone, it just feels good. And every time I've done that, it always came back to me in some way, shape, or form. I don't know if you call it the order of the universe, whatever it may be, but it just always seemed to work and make me feel really good.
Well, if you lift people up, I mean, I think the way that God probably looks at you is you're helping others in need, and at some point you're going to need a hand as well.
Yeah.
I wanted to also talk with you, Glenn. I know there's probably a lot of dog lovers out there. I'm talking about the four-legged variety, not the two-legged variety. the 11th Hour Rescue, how'd you get involved with those folks?
So after my divorce in 2011, I wanted a way to draw the family and to charge behind something. And so we went out, and I say Harry, who's our dog, picked us. We went to an adoption event, and he's given us so much. He brought the family together, and he truly is the apple in our eye. So I felt like we needed to give back. And in turn, we rescued one other dog through them, and we've done dog fostering for about the last 2 years. And yesterday, we just adopted one out as well.
So it's like one of those scenes from like a movie or a sitcom where they go in there, they're going to leave their dog behind, and then they walk out with like four dogs that they just adopted. Is it something like that?
It is. And, you know, I was never a dog owner when I was young. I was actually allergic. But there was something about how he looked at us and how he acted. And then once he came into the house, it was the center of the universe for us. So it worked, and we owe him.
So is your family also involved in your volunteerism with the 11th Hour Rescue?
Yes. So in the house, we do adoptions very frequently. We've done about 13 in the last 12 months. And all the kids contribute to that, whether it's bringing them to the vet, bringing them to get shots, or letting them out and making sure that none of the dogs are misbehaving. So that's one piece. And then the other is they volunteer at the store for 11th Hour. They volunteer doing transports and cleanups. And my wife is very, very heavily involved. Now she's just started taking applications and vetting folks for suitability. So that's another piece.
So for the listeners, because, I mean, everybody's nervous, they're concerned, they don't know which way's up, and they feel isolated. And now that we're talking about the 11th Hour Rescue, I'm sure there's some dogs that really need a new home. If someone wanted to reach out to you and see if they could adopt a dog, how would they reach you or 11th Hour Rescue?
Yeah, so same thing. My cell phone is great, and I'll get you in touch with them. Or you can hit their website, which is 11th Hour Rescue, if you search it on Google. But my phone number is 973-727-8539.
Yeah, I was just thinking I had a bit of an epiphany because I know everybody is hunkered down in their house, and a lot of people are lonely, you know, with the social distancing, which has to be done. And this is no, like, you know, I don't want to pontificate, but lives are in jeopardy if you don't. But I think maybe a dog would certainly brighten up people's day, certainly to have a new companion. I think that's critically important. One of the things that, you know, I was really struck by, too, is I know you just really joined Weichert a few years ago. I know you talked a little bit about your career and that you're an entrepreneur, and you ended up deciding to get into real estate. And I know the market right now is obviously in a bit of turmoil, but it'll bounce back like everything else. How does that work with your philosophy on volunteerism and really showing your love and respect for the heroes that have served us? How does that work in your real estate business?
Yeah, it certainly has filled in all the gaps that I would say I thought I had in my prior life. So in real estate, number one, you're a part of the community, so you're deeply entrenched, and not only knowing the neighborhoods, but knowing the activities. And the activities always find your way back to volunteers in the neighborhoods, so police, fire, EMS, teachers, and healthcare. I'm a part of a program called Homes for Heroes. I figured heroes were my tribe, so they're my people. So the program works pretty simply that when anyone works with me buying or selling real estate, I give 30% of my gross commission back so that they get a hero reward at the end of the day. And it's super important to me. Last year, we did almost I gave almost $40,000 back directly to heroes. This year, we're on a pretty good run rate of $12,000.
So you mentioned heroes are my tribe. That's another thing, too, Glenn, about you. That's just a really cool thing to say and live. Why did you come up with that phrase, heroes are my tribe? Because I agree that, you know, that resonates with me.
Yeah, you know, I think that it boiled down to I looked at the cast of characters, so to speak, police, fire, EMS, teachers, and healthcare and military. And my son, stepson Robbie's in the Marines right now on a ship in the Middle East. So when I look at all of those different roles, I said each one has its own unique challenge. And then I said, what is the customer experience that they want for that challenge? Police officers, they see everyone at their worst, right? So they're going to be skeptical about working with someone on a real estate transaction. So what I have to do is build a credibility to let them know, I get it. If you call me and you've canceled because you had a bad night, we'll do it the next day and I'll schedule it. No harm, no foul. It's a very different mindset that you work with these folks. It's not as simple as saying, oh, he's a policeman and I'll take him out to shop for a house. That isn't the way it works.
So in terms of your real estate career, I know you joined Weikert, but it seemed like right out of the gate you've done very well in a brand new profession. And that's what I touched on earlier about folks. Sometimes they hate their job, but they want their security of a paycheck. And then they look back 20, 30, 40 years later, and they really, unfortunately, didn't follow their love. And I mean, it's easy for me to tell people to do it because I love what I do. But really, I think that's important. Did you know when you jumped into real estate, you were going to be like off and running and doing so well?
I say to people when they ask me that question that I'm not the average Joe at 19 years old coming in to the real estate profession, so I have a very good background in digital and social media, and that was my professional life, and all I've done is adapt that to a profession that was longing for it. So for me, I'm a very positive person. I believe in blessing books and goals and things like that, and when I set out to do something, I don't get sidetracked. I do it. So for me, it was a perfect fit, and it just filled all the gaps.
Now, in terms of your big heart, is you're actually giving a portion of your hard-earned commission to the heroes. You're taking 30% of your gross commission at the time of closing. That's just a wonderful thing. Or is anybody else even doing that, Glenn?
There are some folks that have signed up to compete with me on deals, but then they don't do any transactions post that. But in North Jersey, I'm really one of the only ones. And some people think I'm crazy in real estate because I'll give up that 30%. But for me, one hero that you serve gets 10 referrals. So it's an investment, and hopefully there are 10 more that I can give 30% back to, because I'd love to get to $100,000 a year given back to heroes, right? But I think that's the answer, is that it's just, it's worth it. Every ounce of it's worth it.
Right. I mean, you said heroes are your tribe, so this is a way to certainly show your straight up love and respect for what they're doing. But it is wonderful. I mean, you're giving money, basically out of, you're taking money out of your pocket, and you're giving back to the heroes, which is like an incredible thing to do. In terms of, you know, your commitment to the community, I always like to kind of get a better feel of it, because as time goes on, you get a little reflection on life. Like, for example, I've been a lawyer 31 years. I was supposed to work with my dad, but, you know, when I'm a young lawyer, I didn't know was I going to be a lawyer 30 plus years, and been involved in Special Olympics basketball for over 20 years. And I never knew when I started I was going to be that involved in it. As you've gone through your life's journey and you know, you're obviously in great shape when I met you. You're a handsome devil, so I'm sure you got a lot more years in you. But in terms of just looking back now over these 20-plus years and with your sons, where do you think you're going to go in your future with your volunteerism?
Well, there will be a day when I'm not bellying into a fire anymore, and I see it as there's a lot of moving parts in the fire service that I can do around that, committee work and things that firehouse magic, sometimes we call it. So I think that that's one key aspect. I do think that at the real estate business, that's something I can do for a very long time. A lot of people plan to retire. I don't want to retire. I want to stay in the mix, whether it's a different capacity, but I think I'll stay sharp by doing so. So my real estate business, my goal is to get it to the point where I'm just mentoring and embedded in the community helping, and the agents reap the benefits of that over time.
And what observations have you made with your sons in terms of their involvement? And I have to say, Robbie, God bless Robbie, who's going to the Middle East serving our great country. I mean, this is another great example of, your family's giving back and what's more important than protecting us. I mean, if you don't take care of business overseas, it comes here. So we learned that in 9/11. So, the impact on your son's life, as you've seen them, mature, they're young men now. How do you think it will serve them in the future, watching you, your proud legacy, and also their involvement in the community? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic as they start to really, they're asking questions I wish I had asked at 20 years old, but I started to ask at 40 years old. And that is, for me, tells me they're going to have a great life, because they're now questioning, how do I do it better? How do I make this experience better for another person? And they're doing it 20 years before I did. So my son Ryan said, why are you so willing to make changes? Why does everyone else eat at the same restaurant all the time? And I want him to know that if you embrace change and just look at it like it's another step, it's not a big deal. And their mindset is about that. My son Brendan moved out to become a dispatcher at Purdue University because it was the one step on the way to his next better life, right? And I think they're doing it, which tells me that they're on the right track.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly, I mean, your philosophy in life, once again, is you have to be able to kind of go with the times and also follow your heart and do what you think is best for yourself. And nobody has any guarantees in life. You got to be able to just kind of go with it and do the best you can. In terms of your involvement with the Boonton Fire Department, I'd be remiss if I didn't go over with you a little bit about their needs, their current needs of that. What needs is going on in Boonton Fire Department?
So, as always, we need volunteers. There's never enough, even though Boonton is quite blessed from a manpower perspective. But we are also starting up, and I've kind of spearheaded a committee that will do CPR training, AED, and fire extinguisher training for other departments as well as corporations. And the intent is to get that information out and make sure that skills are there to help people help others. So we're working on that and growing our equipment to facilitate that training. So always working on donations for that equipment is an important aspect to how we operate.
All right. Are you also involved in the mental health community as well?
Yeah, so that is probably my most recent involvement, and it's really in its infancy. So I've gotten put on to a couple of different organizations through our great sheriff, Jimmy Gannon, and a friend of mine. And we've been I don't know how to help someone get to the next step. And I put out a video explaining how I was a 4'9" redhead as a freshman in high school, and not to say I wasn't picked on a bit, and certainly one of the things that I wanted to put out there was that I certainly had the resilience to get by that and look at it and say, wow, I made it. But I realize now that I've lost my sisters that not everyone has that. So I put out a call and a plea to a bunch of folks via a video on social media, asking them to join me in this mental health triage training. So as of now, I've got 11 people that are interested in doing that training, and the goal is really to just give one step in the right way. And we're gonna work with Ricky's Compass to help with that triage and that mental health first aid. So we're getting that started. I think in June will be our first training if all of this kind of wraps up from the pandemic perspective.
Yeah, no, I mean, I touched on, we've had, unfortunately, a lot of sad situations with young kids taking their lives, and it's a shocking thing, and it's all over the place, and I feel obligated, like probably all of us. You can't just sit on the sidelines. I love the fact that you're stepping up and trying to be innovative and come up with ideas, and you said something too, Glenn, which only met you once, but I do like you. I like your style. Is you like to be a problem solver. You know, everybody could sit in a room and point out all the problems. I mean, that's pretty easy to do. You know, it's about getting solutions, solving it, working together, and maybe at times being creative. So that's a real blessing that you're tackling suicide, because it really needs to be tackled head on. I know we have the stigma-free movement for folks that need mental health. There should not be any stigma attached to it. I'm a huge proponent of that as well. And also just being good people, listening and caring and doing the right thing for each other. Ricky's Compass, well, I'm not familiar with that. Is that an organization?
It is, and it's Ricky was someone who took his life, and the organization was made to try to help others help and prevent such unfortunate circumstances. I reached out to them just to find out about a training that they were offering, and they said it was full. So I said, well, what if I bring an entire class? And they had said, we can make that happen. So that's when I reached out to the social media community and got those 11 names.
Well, that's, listen, you keep on going with that passion. I think you're going to have a lot more than 11 people, and you're going to touch lives in a real positive way. I mean, what's more important than saving a life? I have no idea. I don't think there's anything more important than that. I wanted to talk about, you're also involved in the Gift of Life in Philadelphia. What's that all about?
Yeah, so about 4 years ago, a friend said to me, I was doing a ton of business travel, right, 200 days a year, and he said, collect your soaps, and you can bring them to the Gift of Life in Philadelphia. And the reason is that for people to get any kind of gift, whether it be heart, lung, or other transplant, their families sometimes can't afford to stay in the hotels in the Philadelphia area. So Gift of Life has a house that they've bought an old hotel, and they've converted it into family dorming so that they can be close to their loved ones. And the toiletries from the hotels that you grab become their toiletries and comfort items for those. So I put out that to my work community and friends, and ever since we've been collecting boxes upon boxes of these and dropping them off at the Gift of Life. And we always do a side trip to a place called Rose's Pizza, where folks put on a post-it note inspirational messages, and they pay $1. And you put it on the wall, and then a homeless person can come in, take that inspirational message, and pay with the post-it note for the pizza, which is just, you want to talk about a feel-good trip, there's nothing better than that.
That's incredible. Yeah, you know, I had the great honor of meeting the D'Amigos, Chris and Laura, and really, they lost their son, Christopher, in a horrible accident in 2015. But they started the Kindness for Christopher movement with these little notes and paying it forward and kindness and people leaving notes on rocks. And it really touched my heart. We had Billy Cook on, Billy's Baseballs, where inscribed notes on baseballs, and for the incredible service folks serving our great country. And I love the idea of, Glenn, just a little note can change the trajectory of someone's life. And you said earlier, some people are going through stuff and you don't even know, and they're maybe down and they're out. And it's good to just stop and say, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? You okay? I mean, even a stranger. I mean, you know, you see it. But people sometimes, you know, they don't really look around, and you have to really see what's going on around you. I think it's critically important. I wanted to also ask you, Glenn, about your advice for the listeners about getting involved and what things you think they should be thinking about in terms of community involvement and commitment.
Yeah, and I find, Todd, that the getting started piece is where people stumble. Once they're in, they love it and they get involved. So my comment is just do it, and don't get involved in the politics of these organizations. Get involved in the mission. And if you sign on for it, all the rest just kind of fades into the woodwork and you do the task. And then the one thing that I truly believe is tell the world you do it, right? People are always, they feel like they're being vain if they tell the world they're doing that volunteerism. But the reality is, if you tell the world, someone else will join, and then you feel good about it, and you want to do more of it, and you've earned it. So why not tell the world?
So what was talking about the gratitude and the feeling you get inside. So let's say, for example, you're serving the incredible, powerful community of Boone, and you're a firefighter. You go on a mission with your, you know, your heroic teammates there. You fight a fire. You guys all get back to the station. What's the feeling inside among the group when you get back, you know, you did a great job? What's that like?
Yeah, I have to think it's got to be like winning the Super Bowl or, you know, it's just, it's something really neat. And they, you'll find that after those events, we hang out at the firehouse a lot longer than we ever would. Not only are we doing critiques to figure out how we do it better, right, because that's our profile and how we're built. But on the other hand, it's, you know, how did we do this for that person? Or we'll reminisce about what we did and how their face looked. And it's just, it's a really neat experience. And the folks involved, it's just amazing.
And what's it like when you're, you know, the 11th hour rescue, when you know these pets that might even sadly have to be euthanized and you help them find a home? What's that like?
Yeah, yesterday we adopted out probably our best foster ever. He was the kindest dog I've ever encountered. And their 3-year-old daughter had made it up with it. And when you saw the interaction, you knew it was we were going to adopt them. We were going to, what we call it, a foster fail, because we loved them so much. And you saw their face and you knew it was the right thing. That's the only thing you can describe it as. When you see them go to a home and you know you've done that, giving them up's hard, but once you see where they're going, and then the families send you pictures of the dog with their kids, there's something so special about that. It's incredible.
Yeah, no, God bless you for doing all that. And also that feeling, you know, when you stop at Rosa Fresh Pizza, how's that feel inside?
Oh, it's we spend a lot of time in there looking at all the notes. And the most interesting piece about those notes are you probably have thousands of people writing them, and you walk out and you felt like you've walked out with a blessing book filled of things that you should be grateful for. It's a neat place, and certainly helps.
I wanted to talk, before we conclude this incredible show today, Glenn, about your DNA, about when do you feel you're really home, when?
Yeah, that's a great question, boy. Bhutan is home. I've contemplated moving many a times, but there is something so dynamic in this town that it's impossible to leave. I can't do it. So home is when I'm back in town, and the fact that I now work locally as a realtor, I'm home.
So your roots, I mean, what you're really saying is that you really don't feel at home until you're really part of the community, a vibrant, active member who cares deeply and really wants to help the community, lift up the community. Am I right, Glenn?
Yeah, and when you drive up Main Street and wave to every person because you know them, there's something so valuable to that, right? And you do that through all of your interactions and volunteerism.
Right. Well, listen, Glenn, I wanted to thank you so much for just being an incredible person. I hope we've lifted up some spirits today. I believe we have. You're an incredible guy. Just keep on doing what you're doing. I tell all my guests, because I've been blessed with some incredible guests, you're another one of those guys. Just don't stop what you're doing. We need more Glenn Bakers out there. You know, you're really a great guy, and just let your sons know what it's all about. Spread the word with your daughters, your wife, everybody. Just keep that going. That DNA everybody needs. That type of feeling in the community. I wanted just to end the show with just a little bit more of a thank you to the first responders and all the healthcare workers and professionals, people on the front lines. God bless you. I also just would urge everyone, just follow what everybody's been saying. Wash your hands, social distancing. You know, if you're not feeling well, don't be around anybody. We are in this together, and we will come through this stronger than ever. But right now, we just got to do the right thing. I'm sure we will. I pray for everyone. God bless you. I look forward to having you join us next week. And if you know anybody giving back, please call my office at 973-920-7900 or send me an email at tleonard@lawleonard.com. Let me know what you think. If you like the show, if you have a friend or somebody you know that would be a perfect fit here, God bless you. And take care of each other. Talk to you soon.